in the middle of a little kind of 3-week series about the resurrection, about living as Easter people. Last week, we heard about Jesus coming and standing amongst his disciples and that kind of transformation that came as he prayed for them. And today and next week, we're going to be in the chapter of 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Corinthians is written by Paul to the church in Corinth. And he writes this letter to them. And in the letter of Corinthians, he's concerned about lots of things he's heard in the church that are not okay. And so he writes to them about unity. He writes to them about their worship. He writes to them about morality and how they're treating one another and a whole host of things. But I think that he reaches the crescendo, if you're thinking in a musical term, in chapter 15. It's like the last chapter. Now, you say to me, yes, but there's a chapter 16, Joanna. There is a chapter 16, but chapter 16 is kind of, he goes on to think about like practicalities and greetings and logistics and things. So that's chapter 16. Chapter 15 is the pinnacle of his theology. Why do I think that he saves talking about the resurrection to this chapter? Well, if you remember, when Paul wrote letters to the church, they wouldn't have had them to read. They'd have been read out. And I think that he was so passionate about them understanding the resurrection and its meaning, that's what he wanted, ringing in their ears as they finished listening to it being read out. Now, who is writing this chapter? It's Paul. We know that, but I think we can forget the amazing transformation that happened to Paul, because we're so used to St. Paul wrote this, St. Paul did this, we think about his missionary journeys, but this is the man who was persecuting the church when he was known as Saul. Paul himself describes his journey when he's defending himself in Acts 22. He says, "I am a Jew born in Tarsus of Cilicia. Under Gamaliel, I was thoroughly trained in the law of our fathers and was just as zealous for God as any of you are today." And when he uses that word zealous, he uses it very deliberately, because in the Old Testament, those were praised who were zealous for God, who were absolutely determined, as it were, to wipe out all other adversaries against God and his name. And there are some particularly kind of dramatic moments in the Old Testament where physical battles happen and the person fighting for God is described as zealous for him. And Paul says, that was me. I was zealous in persecuting the Christians because, and he talks about, he carries on, he says, "I persecuted the followers of the way." That's what they were known as at that time, those who were following Jesus, the way. "I persecuted them to their death, arresting both men and women and throwing them into prison, as also the high priest and all the council can testify. I even obtained letters from them to their brothers in Damascus and went there to bring these people as prisoners to Jerusalem to be punished." He is the man who, when we read of the stoning of Stephen, he's not just watching, it says he approved of it. And not only approved, he held their coats of the ones who were throwing the stones. He was dramatically against these who were saying that Jesus was the way. What a transformation. And how did this happen? He says this: "About noon, as I came near Damascus, suddenly a bright light from heaven flashed around me. I fell to the ground and heard a voice say to me, 'Saul, why do you persecute me?' 'Who are you, Lord?' I asked. And he heard this voice, 'I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting.'" Paul falls to his knees and a blindness comes upon him. And he has to be led by those who are with him. And he waits in the darkness for 3 days, trying to make sense of what has just experienced. And then God speaks to someone else and says to them, you need to go and pray for Saul. You need to go and pray for him. And what courage it would have taken that Christian to go and pray for the one they knew was out to kill them. That's a whole nother sermon one day about courage. But he goes and he prays, God, open his eyes. And physically his eyes are restored and spiritually his eyes are opened that he has met Jesus risen. And it transforms him. Now, a little bit like we're hearing before, it doesn't then suddenly, the next day, he's this amazing preacher that everybody loves and listens to. Actually, he's got to go on quite a journey. He makes some mistakes. At one point, he has to go back home to Tarsus to kind of be quiet a bit because he's upset people and he needs time to mature in that understanding and to grow. And then Barnabas, my hero, another sermon for another day, goes and collects him and begins to use him in teaching. And that zealousness is transformed by God into zealousness for Jesus Christ. So that's the man who's writing this chapter. He knows. And so the reason that he writes this chapter actually comes in the verse after Emma read. If you're wanting to follow, it's on page 1155. Let me turn. 1155 in the Bibles that are in the seats. And if we go to verse 12 of chapter 15, Paul has heard a very worrying thing. He says, how can some of you say that there is no resurrection of the dead? So he's heard this rumor that some of them in the church are kind of doubting that this happened. And Paul is adamant that they need to understand that the resurrection is key. He is adamant that they understand it. He wants them to see that the truth of the resurrection is historical, that the truth of the resurrection is central to our faith, and that the truth of the resurrection is personal. It's historical, central, and it's personal. Historical, he talks of the witnesses who saw the resurrection. And that's really important because he talks about it and is writing at such a time. He says, yes, some of them have fallen asleep, his kind of sense of some of them have died, but actually there's still a lot alive who saw it. He's giving those the opportunity who want to go and test. You could go and speak to them. You could go and find out. If they're willing to travel quite a distance, but they could go and ask. He also says 500 people saw Jesus at once. And that's important evidence too, because some were saying, this is just a hallucination. But 500 people don't have the same hallucination at the same time. He wants them to know that witnesses saw Jesus alive. And then he says, and I have seen him. The truth of the good news of the resurrection is central to who we are. Somebody said, well, we could sometimes make 3 mistakes. We can see it as, well, that's good news. It's kind of important to my past. Or maybe it's kind of something that I call on every now and again in my present. Or it's something I hold in reserve for the future. Actually, we need to know this truth of the resurrection each day. It's important. To imagine that you're getting on a tube train. I don't know if you've been on a tube in London, or maybe you've been on the metro, or maybe it's similar with a tram in Nottingham. And what happens is that you climb onto the vehicle, okay? And you look round, and there aren't any seats, so you have to stand. Now, if you've been on a tube train in London, there are times when it goes quite fast, and then suddenly it will swerve. And you have that decision, am I going to try and stand, you know, and look cool? When we were teenagers in London, that's what you tried to do. You didn't hang on to anything. You just stood there and you kind of, you know. And then it went round the corner and you were flung onto the lap of a complete stranger, which is terrible in London because you don't talk to strangers. Or you kind of hold on to somebody else. You try and hold on to them. And all the time, there are these bars that are meant for you to grasp hold of, to hold on to, and to stay standing, to enable you to not just try and survive the journey, but to actually be able to enjoy the journey. Now, bear with me as I think this is a helpful picture. Because I think sometimes we treat the good news, the gospel of Jesus, as if it's like that vehicle. And we get on. We say, I believe it. This is me. Okay, I'm signed up. I'm going to journey with Jesus. But then we think, right, we've done it. We've got on. And we try and stand on our own. And the journey can be difficult. That was one of the things we were talking about yesterday, the women. Actually, there are some unexpected twists, and suddenly it speeds up and you can't catch your breath, and then it goes to a sudden halt, and before you know it, you fall over. But we've got on. We've got on. And then we think, well, maybe we should try, and we need to grasp other things, so we try and hold on to somebody else. Or in our lives, we reach out for other things that we find strength in. When actually all the time the good news is there like that solid bar, but we have to hold on to it. We have to choose to say, today I'm going to hold on to that truth of grace, that truth of what God has done for me, so that as I swing round the corner, I'm still holding on. Because the truth is the truth for today, as well as when I first said, I believe in Jesus. This is personal. Paul then describes himself at the end. He says this, I am the least of the apostles and do not even deserve to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God. He's so aware of his past, but he doesn't allow that past to limit what he's able to do now. Because he says, by the grace of God, I am what I am. I love that as an introduction. You know, when we meet one another, I'd like to say, hi, I'm Joanna. I am who I am because of the grace of God. That's what defines me. I am who I am because of the grace of God. And then Paul often does this. He says something, and then it's as though he kind of thinks, oh, but they might misinterpret that. I need to add a caveat, and then I'll come back to my sentence. He often does that. And here he says, and not without effect, this grace has had an amazing effect on me, and I worked harder than all of them. And then he suddenly thinks, oh, they might misunderstand this. They might think that you have to work to earn grace. And so he quickly says, not that you have to earn grace. Actually, grace comes from God. Not I, but the grace of God that was with me. The grace of God working in me and through me. We, as a people, are transformed by this truth of the resurrection. That means that we know through what God has done, our past is dealt with. Our past is dealt with. It means that because of the truth of the resurrection, today, in the present, we can know God walking with us. And it knows that we have that hope of the future resurrection. A hope of a future resurrection. And that's not, when we use the word hope, we used it a lot yesterday, but at no point did I stop and say, what do we mean by the word hope? Because in our culture, I think we often use it in a kind of wishful thinking kind of way. I hope that the sun shines when I'm doing an outdoor service on the 9th of May. I hope that the vet's bill for my cat today is not huge. I hope, you know, there's these things that we long for. But they're kind of wishful things. We don't really know. But hope in Jesus is based on him, on the reality of Jesus who lived and died. It's a living, true hope that we can hold on to. That even death has been defeated. That doesn't mean that death is not hard and painful and difficult and we grieve, but we do not grieve as those without hope because Jesus has defeated. And in Jesus we will rise again. And so we have this eternal perspective that we hold on to. The truth of the resurrection. There was a pastor writing, and he was thinking about how people's brains work differently. You know how we describe now some people are right-brained and some people are very logical and some people are left-brained and they're really creative. And we too easily kind of put ourselves in, I'm this category. And actually, we're such a mixture. But he said this. He says, Christianity refuses to be left or right-brained. It doesn't just emphasize the objective historical reality, but also talks about the personal nature of its truth. It's not just for cognitives, and it's not just for mystics. I love that. It's not just for cognitives, and it's not just for mystics. God takes the truth of the resurrection and burns it deep into human hearts, so that the gospel is received and the personal implications recognized. He takes the truth of the gospel and he burns it deep within our hearts. I wonder this morning where you are on that tube train. I wonder whether actually you're feeling like I'm watching it go past and I think it exists, but I haven't actually stepped onto it. Or maybe you're thinking, I stepped onto it a long time ago, but it feels so unsteady and I'm trying to find my balance. And you need to hold out again day by day and say, to hold on to the truth of who you are, Jesus, for today and the grace you've got for me today that enables me to see who I am in you, not defined by who I was, not defined by the circumstances I'm in now, but defined by the fact that I'm yours. Or maybe we've got on and we know that we've tried to reach out and find stability in the midst of this in lots of other things. In our role or someone else or food or drink or something, you know, what you've tried to find stability in. And you need to reach out again to hold onto that bar. Paul was transformed by Christ. Are we letting him transform us day by day? And my final point is, as I read those words, I'm always encouraged at the amazing work God can do in the lives of people whom humanly we think they are never going to follow Jesus. They're never going to follow him. I just can't imagine it. But as Paul is transformed, I think God can do it for others too. And so it encourages me in my prayer for others. So in a moment, we're going to stand and we're going to worship together. And it's not the last song, so you don't have to go and get your children. We have time to worship. And then after we've done that, we're going to pray. And we're going to pray for some of those people that we long, like Paul, to have their eyes opened to truth. And we're going to pray for ourselves that we'd be able to reach out and hold on. And we're going to pray for our world, that it would be impacted by the truth of the resurrection.